Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Welcome, Chloe Mitchell.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Guys, Chloe Mitchell is joining us. She was the first NCAA athlete.
Fun fact, not NCAA.
Or NAIA.
Exactly.
Okay, athlete to take
money legally.
Money legally through the NIL, which is name, image, and likeness. She's also best known as the daughter of Pete Mitchell, the famous Top Gun pilot. Okay, you got that?
You got that?
Okay.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I am 22.
22.
Yes.
Young. Did you ever see the first Top Gun?
Of course I saw the first Top Gun, Mike. Is that your favorite movie of all time?
It is pro-American.
Yeah.
And okay. I thought they outdid themselves with Top Gun Maverick.
You did?
I did.
Interesting.
Plus, I like the added. We actually had Glenn Powell on the podcast.
I love Glenn Powell.
Who doesn't love Glenn Powell?
Wow.
I think I told him, I'm like, man, you were really handsome.
Is his skin that beautiful in person?
It was virtual.
Okay.
But actually, he's from Austin.
Is he really?
Yeah. And I know his cousin, long story, but he was really kind. That he did a good job. He played the Iceman of his era. But actually, Chloe started Playbooked.
Yes, sir.
Which is it's got a website, but is it app? Based or?
Yes. So it is essentially we've developed tech to where it's just a place for fans, brands, and athletes to sign up, regardless of who you are. So like as an athlete, you can go on the Playbooked app, sign up, make a little profile, and on your profile, it will tell you like the posting rates, in-person appearance rates, endorsement rates. You can even, if you're like a fan of a college athlete, you can go on there as a fan and reach out to one of your favorite college athletes and be like, hey, I would love to send you X amount of money for 10 minutes of your time or
and you guys
a
take
shout
a
out.
Cut.
Yes, we do take a cut.
You are a young innovator.
Thank you very much. I try.
When did you start this company?
So the idea came from my genius father because I came to him with a problem and I was like, Keith, he's a former college athlete for our listeners. He played ball at U of M and he essentially left
University of Michigan.
Go Blue Baby. He essentially left University of Michigan with no NFL prospects, no job prospects, zero money in his bank account, and no job experience. So he didn't want me to end up like that. I was on track to being a college athlete. I just committed to my school and I was like, I want to be able to make money off my name, image, and likeness because I'd kind of stumbled into TikTok fame.
And I want to get to that. So first off, from Southern California, born and raised, 13, went back to Michigan where your father is from.
Yes.
You're in high school and COVID hits your senior year.
Horrible.
Sucked.
Sucked. 2020 senior. Sucked.
No prom, no graduation?
No prom, no spring break, just a big ball of loneliness stuck in my house with my parents. And at that age, it's not fun. Now I'd love it. Then I hated it.
So this next part of the story I love. I mean, it goes to you are a one. I have a feeling you cannot stay
still.
Still, yes.
I feel like you might be the same way.
Yeah, I actually just got a text. Somebody's like, hey, what's your next adventure? And I'm like, we're doing this.
Yeah, I love it.
25. But now I got to go raise all the money. So you're bored and you hit TikTok and you create something called the, am I getting it right? The she?
Shed.
Shed, which yes, is that like your version of the man cave?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a she shed that it was, my parents had bought a property in Michigan that had this old barn in the shed next to it. And so essentially I was bored one day and I saw this boring old shed and I just started taking it out, all of the things, all of the old tools and such. And I posted on TikTok about it for my friends, my 32 followers at the time.
And so you only had 32 followers at the time?
Yes. And half of them were men from India.
Dude, that's disgusting. That's on par, though. That is on par.
Yeah, but then before I knew it, I posted this video for my friends, woke up the next day, I had 30,000 views, which at the time was just unheard of for me, and then I was like, oh, I could have 15 minutes of fame, or I could keep creating content and try to, you know, make a little career out of this, and here we are.
I mean, did you make the she shed just, like, totally bougie, like, comfortable?
So at the time, I was a broke high school senior, and I had like literally zero money to my name. So I used old paint in our garage. I recruited the help of my friends, but it was COVID. So like one of them had to be in the shed because we were all scared at the time. One of them had to be in the shed and then I had to be outside. And so we thrifted and did it on a dime.
Will and I are actually a little uncomfortable. We were going to ask you to mask up because we don't know you.
Yeah, that totally seems like something you guys would ask me to do.
I'm totally mask, yeah. Especially when I fly.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
No.
With one of those big ventilator things on the side?
It's at the point where people still wearing them. I mean, they've got the captain has to come across and say, please respect those who are wearing the mask.
Right.
Please respect those who are not.
Right.
I look sideways at people still wearing masks.
I'm a little judgy, too. I am. And I try not to be.
I know.
But I'm a judger. I just am.
Everyone is that snap glance.
Yeah.
You take... You size people up.
Yeah, you can't help it.
It's just human nature.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, essentially what ended up happening was my friends and I, once COVID kind of died down and we realized we weren't going to die by being in the same room with each other, we finished the she shed up by painting the inside and power washing it and creating all these videos about it. And before I knew it, it had like 40 million views in total and the series. And I had amassed a couple million followers. And at the exact same time, I was, and this comes back to our point earlier, I was able to make money, but I had just signed for a full ride scholarship to a college.
For volleyball?
Yes, sir.
How
for volleyball. I'm like 5'10", but with volleyball shoes, 5'11". But I can jump.
You can jump. You got hops.
Yes.
White person got hops.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what were you doing in the sheet? By nature of what we do, we're on social media, but I don't have a following. And I mean, trust me, my team is like, it's all business, personal stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, you got to post personal stuff, and I just won't do it.
Yeah. Why?
It feels icky.
Icky in what way?
Like, look at me. Mm. Look at me. And I definitely...
Totally.
I think it's also a scar from where I came from, is like we didn't advertise the nature of our work.
Right.
We didn't have social media accounts.
Yeah.
While on active duty.
You're not allowed to at all?
No, you are, but they're monitored.
Mm.
And I've got to get over that. And they're like, just let people see you, the authentic you. But
yeah.
I've got to ask you, what were you doing in the she shed? Were you doing like little projects?
So yeah, what we did, it was a really small space. It was probably like half the size of this room. Like if we were to cut it off right here. And I love Pinterest. What girl my age doesn't love? Do you know what Pinterest is?
My wife always sends me like, hey, this is how I want to do the baby room.
Exactly. Like, okay. Who doesn't love Pinterest?
Like, how much is this going to cost me?
Yeah. Well, that's the best part about Pinterest and DIY, which is kind of what my brand was centered around at the beginning, was I could do it myself on a dime. So I like got these little palettes. I stole them from the back of this warehouse. Like me and my friends pulled up in my car and I put these palettes in. I put a bed on these pallets.
Entrepreneurial.
Yeah, right, yes. Right. I put beds on a pallet, on these pallets. What else did I do? I mounted this. It's really ratchet looking back, but I mounted this TV on this shelf and this little thing of wood. I thrifted a microwave and a little refrigerator, and then there was a table that I could use, and I put an old beanbag from one of my friends in there. It just became a hangout spot. And as I was documenting all of this, I realized that I actually really like do-it-yourself content. So mm-hmm. then my parents got lucky, and I started to redo their bathroom, their master bathroom as well. I
are
put
you,
in
are
a fireplace.
Like construction?
Yeah, all by myself, like 40 pound. So after the she shed, the thing that I did, the project that I decided to commence on was a little fire pit outside by the she shed, so the viewers could still like love the she shed, but know that I'm working on something outside as well. So I towed these 40 pound bags of gravel by myself, and I poured them into this little area that I had made a big square with 2x4s, and then I made this fire pit, and yeah, you could see it all. I'm very proud of that series, but I'm glad.
So your parents thought you're losing your damn mind.
Yeah, they were like,
"You want to do what to the bathroom?"
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the bathroom, I'm like, "Yeah, I want to paint your tile." They're like, "No, you're not painting my tile. What did I do? I paint the tile, and it still looks great to this day." Highly suggest you paint your tile.
Disrespect for authority.
Yeah, for sure. And I brought up the property value of their house too. So
they owe you.
Yeah.
So when they finally sell, you'd be like, "Hey."
Yeah, you're welcome.
20%.
Yeah. I want some of that. I want 20%, and I want you to take me on a cruise, but we're not there yet. One day.
And I want to ask you, so I read, your dad, while playing football for the University of Michigan, went on The Price is Right? Is that right?
Yeah. I love this question.
And won a...
car.
Red Trans Am.
Mm-hmm.
And could he take that at the time?
No. So, I mean, yes, but he had to put it in his brother's name because it violated potential rules that could affect his eligibility. So he won a car based on literal odds. And because of legislation at the time, he couldn't put it in his name. So, and that is kind of the brainchild. That's where it comes from, where my father was like, I don't want you to be like me. Legislation is going to change. And what I want to do with you when this changes is for us to create a company in which we can help athletes not end up like how I was after school, broke.
So entrepreneurial blood runs in the family.
Oh, yeah. My parents are chronic entrepreneurs. I am a chronic entrepreneur, and my baby brother, fingers crossed, he's going to take up the cross and be an entrepreneur as well.
That's amazing.
Were your parents entrepreneurs?
Yeah, yes. My dad started his own, my dad started with Hyatt Hotels.
Oh, wow.
You know Hyatt Hotels?
Oh, yeah.
So Hyatt was actually based out of San Francisco, the headquarters.
Okay.
And our whole family has been in San Francisco since 1899.
Yeah.
So all the cousins, God bless them all, except when you have 100 Italians in a restaurant for like Christmas Day, it's overwhelming.
It's got to be fun, though.
And I'm a recluse, so my parents always have to answer what I'm doing. So Hyatt at the time decided, and he was within their marketing department, if I believe that's correct, and actually did some deals with Trump.
Oh, wow.
At hotels. So he had a deal with Trump, and I'm going to blank on it. I believe his wife at the time was Ivanka.
Yeah.
And he's like, Trump was okay to deal with. He's like, Ivanka was...
a menace.
He was hard to deal with.
Interesting.
But they made the decision to move to Chicago, and he's like, I just can't uproot my family. Mm. And so he started his own marketing and advertising agency and did very well for himself. And I look like my dad. I take after my dad. Not as successful as my dad, mm-hmm. but I'm trying. Give me time.
Do you get your intensity from him?
Yes, very much so.
That's a good thing.
Scary, scary man.
Scary man.
To this day, he was definitely the, I don't want to say the punisher, but the disciplinarian of the house. My mom was the emotional rock, though.
Mm.
If you got my mom pissed, mm-hmm. she 5 feet of her could really put some stank on her slaps.
Is she Italian as well?
She's Italian. My dad, we're a mix on that side. Sorelli is actually, it's not pronounced the right way. It's Americanized, as we say, so it's Sarai.
Sarai.
If you like the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah.
So the origins is actually Basque.
Wow.
Which is the Pyrenees Mountains region between Spain and France.
Yeah.
But people always think we're Italian. So
cool.
My mom's in Alioto. Anyways, so you've amassed a large following.
Yes.
You got your first sponsorship for $3,000.
Yes.
And now you're fearing
yeah.
that you're going to lose it because you're stepping into
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm stepping into being a college athlete, and I don't know if I've ever shared this before, but it's time that I do. So before the summer before I became an official college athlete and got that $3,000 deal, I was making great money. I think Walmart paid me 10 grand for one video.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, one video. And that was my house and my childhood home is very weird. We had a caboose, which was another shed. It was like a pool house caboose, which is what I started to redo. Walmart saw that I was doing that and wanted a piece of the pie. So I was making great money. And then I became a college athlete and legislation passed. And that is when I got that $3,000 deal for the putter. And so I couldn't talk about being a college athlete for a couple of months online. I pretty much just went dark. Like, I didn't talk about being a volleyball player. I didn't talk about any of that because I didn't want to mess up my scholarship. And I also didn't want to, like, lose eligibility, obviously. Mm. So legislation passed this one random day. Danny I was like, oh, yeah, we're gonna make name, image, and likeness legal. So I got the call, freaked out, drove home after practice, made a mini golf course for my father. And this $3,000 deal was for Bloodline putters. Honestly, still a great product. Love mm-hmm. it. Made a mini golf course, edited it, posted it, and waited to see what the world would say. And for 3 days, nothing. I heard nothing. We were like, okay, I guess it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I'm no D1, you know, household name, Caitlin Clark athlete. I'm just Chloe, who had a couple million on TikTok and was...
You're Chloe yeah. freaking Mitchell.
Chloe Don't you ever forget that. Mitchell, yes. But at the time, I wasn't. At the time, I was a meek 18-year-old who didn't understand the full power of social media marketing. Now looking back, I'm like, oh, that was really cool. I'm a badass.
Now, did something happen 3 days after? Did
3 days later, I just got off a plane with my mom, and every single news article that I ever wanted to be on, we had Fox, we had The Athletic, we had some of the biggest names in news reaching out and talking about how they wanted to interview me about name, image, and likeness. So that's how we got Playbooked on the map, and here we are.
When did Playbooked start?
Playbooked started back in, I want to say, like, the idea came a while back, but 2019 was when it was like, okay, like, this is a really good idea, we want to do this. And at that time...
So you're still playing?
Yeah, at that time I was still in high school. So at that time I was like, I know I'm going to play college ball. Like, I know I'm going to play college ball. That's what I want to do. My parents were great. They were like, we're not paying for your school, so figure it out yourself. Praise God they said that yeah. because this is where I'm at today. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, essentially 2019 is where the baby of an idea happened, and 2020 is when we executed.
And so you're in college and you're starting this business mm-hmm. at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What? How much time did it take? I mean, did you guys do like 12 months of research, creating the app?
That's a great
question.
The
process, the business model.
So I had the privilege of being able to focus on the content creation and the spokesperson aspect of it, whereas my father, who's also still working his big boy job at the time full-time, which he's no longer anymore, and he's working at Playbook full-time, which is awesome, but he was able to handle a majority of the research and the investor side of it. I was privy to all these conversations, mm-hmm. but I was 18. I didn't know what was going on. So they gave me a seat at the table. I was able to learn from them what was going on, and I just focused on the spokesperson aspect of it. Fun fact, when I went on Fox News, I was in my dorm, like, communal area, and I had all my, like, teammates. I had a few of my teammates blocking off the communal area, and they're like, she's on the phone with Chris Wallace. Nobody can come in here. And, yeah, that's something I'll never forget.
The power of Fox.
Wait,
every other network I've been on, which are all great networks, News Nation, Newsmax, yeah. One American Nation, but when you go on Fox, like, I have like 20 emails.
Yeah.
Like, Fox is...
Is legit.
Is powerful. And
yeah.
Have you ever been to Fox?
No, not in person.
I smile every time I go in there.
Really?
Great people.
Really? I believe
I love
that.
The Fox and Friends crew.
Yeah.
Just great, great people. It's
it.
Fun to go in there. So you're starting this company. Let's go into how, and I'm a advocate for NIL.
Yeah.
But there are people
that hate it.
I'm sure your face is on a dartboard.
Oh, yeah.
Certain NCAA, like, 100%. Football coaches, offices, like, we're going to kill that girl.
Yeah, like, why is she such an advocate for this? Well, the best part about NIL is it's, and I love being surrounded by the most American, you know, decor on planet Earth. It's the American way, capitalism. Being able to monetize your name, image, and likeness, and being able to be a young entrepreneur, that's so American. So the concept, I'm so glad it's not a debate anymore, and I'm so glad it's legal, and I don't have to fight this battle anymore. But anyone who isn't a fan of name, image, and likeness isn't a fan of the American way. I said what I said.
When people say America is founded on democracy,
yeah.
Like, no, it's not.
No, capitalism.
It's free enterprise.
Yeah.
Capitalism or free enterprise. That's what we're founded on.
Yep.
Why do you think people left, you know, Britain?
Yeah.
To evade taxes, to you know, gain some social mobility.
Right.
When people downgrade capitalism, it annoys me. And it's usually people that aren't willing to just go for it.
I agree.
And they're upset about where their station in life is.
Yep.
And we recently had an event where a woman went off on capitalism in the strangest of settings.
Oh no.
And we were at a resort called Rhythmia Resort.
Okay.
Which is an ayahuasca resort. I went.
Did you do ayahuasca?
Didn't like it.
Really?
Wasn't for me.
Oh, I want to do it so bad.
I went with John Wellborn was supposed to go. He's here in Austin. He played 10 years in the NFL. Great dude. Sanjay Ribeiro, who's known as the Michael Jordan of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's the sweetest guy.
I love BJJ.
He's one of the best. He's here in Austin.
Really?
The most deadly guys in the world are usually the kindest. And then we had Chep Rose. I don't know if you recognize that name.
Yeah, I recognize the name. But
Southern Charm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You did ayahuasca with all those people?
And some woman, like after the ayahuasca, whatever, trip, she just goes on this tangent about all you white men in the room, you capitalist pigs.
Oh.
And I'm like, you know, actually, capitalism was a cure to feudalism in which people could gain social mobility.
Please tell me you said this.
Oh, you know, I did the next day. And I'm like, you just may want to check your facts there. And she was from the UK. She came up and apologized. But
good.
This old sort of perception that it taints these young college athletes and makes them professional athletes. Mm. It's, I mean, you guys are sacrificing your bodies. I mean, even worse with sports like football.
I mean,
some of those guys will.
Your brains.
Mm-hmm. And some guys will get so hurt in the NCAA.
Yeah.
That they'll never be able, even if they had the potential to play in the NFL, they have a career-ending injury.
Yep.
They should absolutely make money.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, they're the cash cows for these big universities. They are essentially, without those athletes,
boosters.
Yeah, there would be little to nothing of sports and of the media entertainment industry. I mean, it blows my mind that people still have the audacity to say that name, image, likeness is destroying college sports, because I think it's just enhancing it.
It's created a whole industry.
Yep.
Which will generate revenue.
Yeah.
For taxes for America and everything else.
Yep.
But it's the same thing with, you've heard professors are like, they'll poo-poo on sports and it's a distraction. And it's like, hey, that $800 million endowment that your university has.
It's from sports.
It's from sports.
It's from
the one that pays your salary.
Your salary? Yeah.
Yeah.
That bonus you're going to get at the end of the year, that's from incredible ticket sales. Probably from your women's basketball team too, if you're at Iowa.
Yes.
So I think the entire concept of not being a fan of NIL is also just not only anti-American, but it's also like anti, I don't know how to say this in a more eloquent way, but it's just anti-youth. Like, being able to recognize that you're in college for 4 years as a young adult, I'm speaking from experience. Recognizing that I'm in college for 4 years as a college athlete, and I have this opportunity to not only make brand connections, learn how to negotiate, boost my resume, get my foot in the door with people that usually wouldn't have any interest in talking to me if I wasn't a college athlete, develop this self-reliance and this autonomy that NIL has catalyzed, and it just breeds that in the industry, because these college athletes are being made aware that they're able to have influence, and with that influence, make money, and with that money, do great things.
It's no different than a young kid in high school starting a company that ends up on TV because they
exactly
everyone's yeah applauding,
like, right? Oh, you're such a trailblazer. Oh, look at you take the bull by the horns, and as a young child, you know, take these risks. That's exactly what people are doing with NIL. But thankfully, the risk has been put to the side, and now they're able to just do their thing and make money.
Have you gotten threats?
Not threats.
A lot of negative.
I know they're out there. Mm-hmm. I've gotten hate, but no threats.
How many athletes do you have on the platform?
Hundreds. We have access to thousands. Like, the best part about Playbooked in our tech is if a brand comes to us and is like, hey, we want to pour $250,000 into athletes. Say it's a hair care brand. Mm-hmm. And we need this certain kind of hair type, so curly hair, and we want them to be athletes from non-revenue generating sports because we want to spread the wealth. All we have to do with a click of a button on our app is say, hey, do you have curly hair? And are you part of, you know, tennis, golf, or, you know, discus, whatever? And in minutes, we'll have athletes saying, oh, I want to work with this brand. We want to do this, this, and this. And we can get that roster of athletes, send it over to the brand, and pump out a campaign. And
can a brand say, we want it within this region?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's usually the case.
So I'm assuming when an athlete does their intake mm-hmm. into Playbooked. Mm-hmm.
It takes minutes, by the way.
But you're not asking hair type?
No.
No, none of that?
No, no.
That's after the fact?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, eventually I hope our tech is robust enough to have all that information privy, but some athletes also don't want to have that information about them out there. Like, being able to give them the opportunity through a push notification to be like, hey, you can apply, and here's an opportunity for money, that's a little bit less invasive than saying, oh, we know this about you, like, you should be a part of this campaign. I'd be freaked out if a brand was like, hey, Chloe, we have all your stats on you, and we want to work with you because of X, Y, and Z. Like, I want to be able to choose if I want to work with you and why I want to work with you, you know?
Are you talking with athletes? Do you go out and
yeah, all the
advise
time.
Them? And
yeah. My end goal is to be, who doesn't say this, is to be a consultant and a speaker. Like, I would love to just consult with athletes and tell them, this is what you can do to build your brand, or this is how you can best communicate when setting a contract. And I also just want to speak and educate and do all the things.
Do you do keynote speeches?
Not yet.
You would crush it. I can just tell.
Wow, coming from you, that means a lot.
I'm a keynote speaker, and honestly, quite frankly, that's how I make my living.
Yeah, you're a savant.
No, not at all. I'm up and coming. How I ended up on the list, I have no idea. But
oh, come on.
No, I really don't. Like, it came out of nowhere in 2023 on the Global Gurus top 30 leadership speakers in the world. And I'm like, how did that just happen? I'm like, where'd you guys find me?
That's awesome. Because
I don't do the big Tony Robbins stages.
Sure.
I haven't really done those type of, I've done a few.
Can I ask why?
You know, I just haven't had those leads.
Yeah.
And we're about to change that. But I'm coming to the realization that, like, hey, this was not my intent. This is like my sweet spot. Mm. And I've got to provide for my family. And I do love driving impact mm-hmm. through a speech. And there's no greater feeling than people coming up and they're like, hey, that was the best leadership speech I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Or a great perspective I've never even thought of. Or getting the emails like, hey, you changed my life. But I guess 81% of all leads are driven by your speaker reel. And Will and I were talking about this this morning.
Huh.
And I really don't have any speaker reels. I don't bring videographers to my speeches. It's just like one of those things. I almost say maybe it is a little bit of laziness,
yeah.
But it's also that, hey, look at me. Mm. I think I need to adjust my personal metrics to be low in modesty,
yeah.
High in humility.
Yeah.
Not high in modesty, high in humility.
Because
when I do speak, I start every speech with, let me say this up front. If I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants, men and women that were better than me.
Yeah.
And my whole speech is about them yeah. and the great leaders I served with, or the peers I served with, and what I saw them do so well, yeah. And then I'll denigrate myself with failures and make the audience laugh. But yeah. Dude, you would crush it, especially with your story
and what you built. I really appreciate that. Can I say something to you?
No.
I'm going to.
Okay.
There's someone said this to me really early on, and it was about posting on social media. I'm like, I am so sick of seeing my face. I'm so sick of hearing my voice. I am so sick of editing. I'm over it. I'm sick of me, because that's what my whole brand is. That's what your whole brand is. Someone said, they're like, yeah, to be an influencer, you have to be just a little bit narcissistic. And then someone said, well, you're not narcissistic if you're questioning if you're narcissistic. So one, you don't have to worry about that. Two, you have your why. You have your purpose. If you shift in your head, because I had a very similar mindset to you. If you shift in your head, I have my why. What is going to be my how? Social media is your how. Social media is your receptacle. Social media is what is going to bring eyeballs to your why, which in turn is going to help more people. So maybe that mind shift.
This is why. And when I talk about leadership, it's a two-way street.
Mm.
You're 22?
Yes, sir.
I'm 46. I meant 40. no, thank you for that. Yeah. That perspective, I'm gonna think on that.
Yeah.
And my wife has been saying it, and she's only 33.
Yeah.
I totally robbed the cradle on that one.
Yeah. You're having a little girl too.
Which is what we wanted.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Do you have names?
We do. Well, let me start here. So we did the reveal cake.
Oh, cute.
On Tuesday. Oh. And so I had to go pick it up, and I take it out of the box, and it's from this great cake place, Haley's Cakes, and in Austin. My wife's like, just get it. I'm like, just wait until you get home from work.
Right.
Let's chill. Let's go for a walk with the dogs first.
Yeah.
But something about the light, she's looking through the icing, and she's like, it's blue. God, it's blue. I'm like, hold on.
Yeah.
And
she's like analyzing the frosting.
Yes. And I'm like, and I looked at it. I didn't see what she saw. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it looks blue.
No.
And so then she's like, hey, let me go get ready a little bit, because she wants to record it.
Cute.
And we do the champagne glasses, and we're like, don't, no, you're looking, don't look. And put it in, do the twist, and it's pink. And I'm like, I told you.
Did she just freak out?
She wants a little mini me.
Oh.
And secretly, I wanted a little girl.
Yeah.
I've got my daughter is 20. She will always, you know,
yeah,
be my little girl as well.
Be your baby.
Mm-hmm. As well as my son, who's 16. But this one is going to be interesting. And we're excited. So Scarlett Antoinette Sorelli.
Oh, that name is Antoinette. I love that.
That's my mom's name.
Scarlett Antoinette. Oh, she's going to be a powerhouse with a name like that. Scar.
We're going to call her Scar.
That's so, I have chills.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I'm so happy for you, Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is it freaking you out that you're bringing a tiny human into this world, though?
I would rather go to combat.
Wow.
Oh, hands down. Well, I was also surrounded by 40 guys that like protected me. Or push me to the back, and they're like, hey, we got this.
Yeah.
I was always that way, because it's not my specialty.
Mm.
I mean, but I don't mind changing diapers. I've got like no issue with that. Just given the nature of what we've done, but it's just, I'm always, always protective.
Mm.
And that little human being, it's just like,
you fully know, dependent on you.
Dude, I tell you.
It's so exciting though.
I know.
It's, like, part of me is jealous, and I've never felt that.
I'm going to be the old AF dad.
You're not old, Mike.
Well, no, at her graduation, I'm going to be doing the math here. I'm going to be roughly 65. People are going to be like, is that your grandfather? No, that's my dad.
That's my father.
But hopefully I'm like.
You'll be cool.
Hopefully I still am in shape.
Yeah.
And,
like the fit old guy?
My wife is getting me into like, she's like, you got to take care of your skin. So she's got me on like toner
now.
And
I love her. I need to meet her.
Well, she's like, God, like, because she met me when I was 39. She actually put on my 40th birthday.
Oh, that's awesome.
And now she's like, man, you were in shape back then. And like, now I got broke Mike. And I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. One hip replacement down.
Really? You've had your hip replaced?
Yes.
What was that recovery like?
It was awful. It was more or less on a couch. So I did a Birmingham hip resurfacing.
What does that even mean?
Which they cut off half the femur head.
Oh, gosh.
And put this metal cap on.
Oh, gosh.
But what makes it different, and it is a form of a hip replacement.
It's
called a young man's hip replacement.
Okay.
Because some pro athletes sometimes go back and do sports. But
wow.
With a hip replacement, they move, they go, and again, I'm interior or from the front, and they basically just move the muscles to the side and do your hip replacement, a full hip replacement.
Oh.
With this, they actually have to go through the glute.
No.
So they cut the glute muscle. And so it's a little more, I believe the word is evasive or invasive.
Yeah.
And so the recovery is longer. But you get more mobility out of your hip, and the Birmingham hip resurfacing lasts, I think data is like 20, 25 years. And so I'm skydiving again. And if that wears out, then you go to a full total hip replacement.
Wow. You know, hips are such a touchy subject for the Mitchell family. My brother, he was literally the best athlete that I've ever met. The best athlete. I'm talking about him like he's dead. He's still alive. He's alive and well. But he was the best athlete I'd ever met, and he got the opportunity to go play Gonzaga basketball.
No way.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
So last he was
year. Yeah, he's like
national, nationally ranked.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he had a sister who co-founded a company for name, image, and likeness. I'm like, this boy's about to be on TV. I'm about to be
and
making
I'm
him
make
so much money.
Off of you.
Yeah,
yes.
Right, yeah. Right. That's all I want for him. Yeah, I mean, I want to make a bag, but I also want him to be, you know, financially free. Like, that's huge. And financially literate, which he still is not. We're working on that. Anyways, he tore his labrum in his hip, and he rehabbed it his whole freshman year, and they had to go in, similar to you, not a replacement, but they had to shave down the femur head.
And orthoscopy,
yeah.
I believe is what it's called.
I can't say that word either. Exactly. And they had to shave down the head, and he rehabbed, and he got his head right again, and then guess what happened? Tore his other labrum at Gonzaga. Mm. And he rehabbed that, got surgery on it, and by the end of his freshman year, he had two labrum surgeries, and he tore it again.
Mm.
Yeah, so he's no longer playing basketball, but because his body won't let him.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to hear that your hip is good. That was just a side story I figured I'd share.
So I did that. I did the arthroscopy in 2012.
That rehab is hard.
And it's about 6 months of rehab.
Oh.
So my unit is going to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to be the operations officer for the entire task force.
Oh,
which
gosh.
Sucks because you're sitting behind a desk. You're supporting the boys. It is important.
Got it.
And making sure they have all the combat support on their missions. But it's also like, you've got like a, it's almost like going to the movies with like just all these screens on the wall.
So stressful.
You get accustomed to it.
Okay.
We deploy to Afghanistan.
Okay.
And I'm next to an actual unit, what we call a strike force, that goes out and does bad things to bad people.
Mm.
And my buddy is the troop commander. Great dude, Naval Academy, handsome, just smart.
Yeah,
just,
got
like,
it
guys
all.
Loved him. Kelsey. And he goes out on what we call a turnover op. The unit that was there when we arrived does a turnover op where they just show them how they're operating.
Yeah.
And on that operation, which is the first operation, like the second day we're there in Afghanistan, we're there for 4 months, he steps on a rock and his patella goes halfway up his thigh.
His patella?
So they've got to kink the mission, but they're out in the middle of, you know, bad guy country. And so they got to get the helicopters in and get him out. And so they say, hey, we're going to abort this mission. And they send his call sign over the radio because you got to report who's injured.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad for him, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, that means I can shift over and actually be a strike force commander.
Okay.
And my commanding officer, who was a great, he's now an admiral, looks at me, he's like, what's the status of your hip? And I'm like, oh, sir, I'm totally clear. I'm good.
Were you clear?
No. And so he's like, well, let me call. We have like this really robust human performance center with like therapists and docs and everything like that.
That travels with you?
No, that's in the United States.
Got it.
And they're in charge of my recovery.
Okay.
And he's like, well, he's like, let me call this guy named Hutch. And he's like, I'll find out.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, sir, I'm cleared. He's like, I'll call Hutch. I'm like, roger that. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I run, get on a satellite phone. It's the middle of the night in Virginia Beach. And Hutch answers the phone. And I'm like, listen, so-and-so just got hurt. You're going to find that out later.
Yeah.
That means I can move over as the strike force commander. And he's like, ah, Mike. He's like, dude, you're not ready, man. I don't want to re-injure the injury. And I'm like, Hutch, let me put it to you this way. You're going to get a call from this individual. And if you don't say I'm cleared, I will fly back to Virginia Beach and murder you and your entire family. And I know him well. He's like, I'm like, I will be fine.
Yeah.
And he covered for me.
Wow.
So basically we lied to a guy who I highly respected, and it was a great deployment.
Was it?
Oh, it was great.
Were you in pain the whole time?
I could tell. So, you know, climbing in the mountains, like if there was like a little step up, like I would go with the good hip at the time.
Interesting.
And eventually it, like the strength got back there, but it did. It's the same hip I had to get replaced. It definitely probably didn't allow the full recovery. And so I started to feel pain maybe 3-4 years later, and then eventually I had to replace it.
You tell stories so well.
Thank you.
Like the way you just articulate yourself, I'm on the edge of my seat over here.
Storytelling is oral history. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love stories. I love the movies.
That's my whole career. Do you know my dad wrote movies?
No way.
Yeah. So this is like his life before me.
College football player at Big Blue.
Yeah. And this is actually an interesting story. He didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, right? He's in college. He's a football player at University of Michigan. And these professors, I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, these professors would go and they would just mark a C on all of his papers. He's a football player. He needs to pass. He needs to play. They wouldn't even read his stuff. Just get a C every time. No notes. No nothing. So one day, my father like walks up to this professor and he's like, hey, like I see that everybody's getting these notes. Like I really want you to see what I wrote. And the professor looks him in the eyes and says, I don't give a shit about what you wrote or what you have to say. You're a football player. You don't belong here, but you need to pass my class. So he left University of Michigan. Great, great education. By the way, I'm not slandering them whatsoever.
It's hard to get into U of M.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was just looked at as like a meathead. So he left, moved to California, and he started writing sports movies. So he wrote The Sandlot, Mr. 3000. Not The Sandlot. He wrote Sandlot 3.
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. 3000. He wrote with Bernie Mac. He wrote like Mike 2. Yeah, a bunch of cool sports movies.
Holy, no kidding.
So storytelling and entrepreneurship is just
in the Mitchell family.
In my blood. Yeah. So that's why I appreciate
how you tell stories. I bet he's a fun guy to be around.
Oh, you'd love him. He really wants to meet you. You'd love him. You'd love him. Yeah, very interesting guy, but the way you tell stories is impactful.
I do. So did NIL, and I know we're switching gears here.
I like it.
Did that also affect the transfer portal? Were those two linked at all?
In some ways, I would say, I think the overarching answer would be no. I think the transfer portal as a whole is just horrible in general for athletes.
So you don't like that?
Yeah, I've had a couple of really close friends go through the transfer portal and they've just had poor experiences.
Meaning they did transfer to another place and it just didn't work out?
No, it worked out. But being in the portal is not the place you want to be as a college athlete. I don't know too much because I can't speak from personal experience because I didn't transfer. But I had one of my best friends. She's a volleyball player as well. She went to San Antonio State. And she, transfer portal was brutal for her. But it ended up working out in the end. I don't know if they're intrinsically linked, NIL and the transfer portal. But that's my answer. Not very good. Sorry.
So recently, I have gone and spoken to like college football teams. And,
yes.
There was one who recently left. I don't want to mention his name or the university, but left. He's like, I'm going to the NFL. He's like, screw this whole NIL and transfer portal. Educate me on this. So I know kids coming out of high school now are certain universities help maximize their NIL, correct?
It depends on how. That question is hard because, yes, you can. Legislation is starting to change effectively so that all high schoolers can start creating their brand and making NIL dollars. I don't necessarily know how to answer that question fully.
Because I've heard, let me tell you, I'll give you some context. What I've heard is like this guy was considering the University of Texas, but like Alabama's like, hey, we can make sure you get like $4 million.
Oh yeah. NIL. Yeah. I think I actually read an article about that. Technically you cannot promise from what I've read thus far, and it's always changing. You cannot promise there's a difference between endorsements and pay for play. So you can say, hey, we have a great NIL program. We are really good at content creation. We can help build your brand, and we can get you money. But we can't say, oh, I'll give you $300,000.
We can guarantee you.
Yeah, no, that's pay for play. Like, you can't do that.
So are these programs like Alabama? Is all the boosters from Alabama that own companies like that? Yeah.
Well, boosters, to really hone in on that, do you know what collectives are?
No.
Yay! I love explaining collectives. So collectives are essentially really rich individuals, alumni, boosters that are able to pour money into the lives of college athletes. They're boosters, but just with a different name, collectives. Okay. So like, for example, Playbooked, we white label our technology, and we work with a collective called Stadium in Maine at University of Michigan. So our entire Playbooked app is decked out in maize and blue, and all of the athletes at University of Michigan that want to participate in NIL are on that platform. So this collective can go in and be like, oh, I like these athletes. We want to give them X amount of money to work with this brand. So
specific to University of Michigan
athletes.
Yes.
And they have one. They have them everywhere.
You guys white labeled that.
Yes.
Genius.
Thank you.
That is...
That wasn't me. I can't take credit for that, but yeah, genius. That was K-Mitch.
Your founder.
My father, yeah.
I take credit for my amazing team all the time.
Yeah, no.
They come up with all the ideas, I execute them, like, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, they're genius. I'm just here to talk about them. Yeah. Right.
No, I'm kidding. That is, you know, interesting enough. We actually, Will, were you with me when we went out to the Cavaliers? Cleveland Cavaliers? So, the basketball team,
yeah.
Professional. Basically had brought on a guy from Nike, and you know which Nike is, but
yeah.
Nike is like famous for their alumni going on to do totally. Amazing thing. One of the best marketing.
Totally.
You know, they wrote the playbook.
Yeah.
And they brought him from Nike, and he was from Cleveland back, to assist the pro athletes with their endorsements.
Interesting.
Because he's like, yeah, NIL is now robbing money from professional athletes.
Interesting.
And I just sort of smiled, and I'm like, as it should, as it should. And I want you to explain something to me. Could you throw up Playbooked? Because you had this graphic.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Oh, totally I think this. I know the one you're gonna pull up.
It's the
yeah okay. the megaphone looking thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to explain that.
Yeah, and I think you'll for everyone over the age of 40, you'll probably educate us on this, because people think, oh, this person has 3 million followers. They must be the person a brand wants to go with.
That's not always the case.
Exactly. It's well, yeah, 3 million followers, but like 5% engagement.
Exactly. So this graphic that he's about to pull up is really interesting because it explains the power of micro influencers. So I'm a macro influencer. I got 1 million followers. I got a lot of reach.
But you started as a micro.
But I started as a micro. And where
is it?
It should be go to brands or about us. I think there's a few different ways you can get there. They just revamped our website too. But essentially, when you're a macro, so there are brands that came to us. No, it's not in brands.
Go to about us.
Yeah, go to about us. Then scroll down, yeah. A little bit more.
And you've got an all-star team.
Yeah, our team's great. Our board is even better. Where is that graphic? Maybe go to athletes. Our team literally just revamped this entire website, and I'm really loving seeing it on this big TV.
Well, he's pulling that up.
Anyways, so we had a brand come to us, and they were like, hey, we've worked with, I'm not going to say who, but we worked with Kim Kardashian, and we paid her so much money to promote this product. What did she do? She didn't even move the freaking needle. She didn't sell anything. She didn't have the numbers this brand thought that they would have. So what ended up happening is we really delved into researching how micro influencers paired with macro influencers can make a campaign unforgettable and incredible. Meaning, I would post a video with my reach for H&R Block. Right? Or let's say ZipRecruiter. We actually did this with ZipRecruiter. And with my reach, I was able to get a bunch of eyeballs from a bunch of different people on this ZipRecruiter campaign. But the micro athletes that posted as well were able to get that engagement up. because when you have 3,000 followers, your 3,000 followers, yeah, where is
just click brands. Keep going.
Yeah, when you have a really...
It's right here. Keep going. Keep going.
Ha ha! There we go. Okay, so look at this. Look at this funnel. There are nano, micro, mid, macro, and mega macro. As you go up this funnel, you will see that the reach is getting bigger and better. Like if you look at my analytics, I have an audience in the UK, I have an audience in Australia, I have an audience, most of it's in the States. But these nano influencers, they don't have that. But what they do have is really high engagement.
What's the difference between a mega and macro or a nano in terms of like average like engagement?
Yeah, so a nano influencer, as you can see on this graphic, it's like 0 to 10,000 followers. Mega macro, 1 million. Everything in between, so micro, 10K to 100K, mid, 100K to 500K, macro, 500K to 1 million. So my best friend Ernesto, let's talk about him. He is a micro influencer. He's a nano influencer. He has a couple thousand followers, but his engagement blows mine out of the water because those 4,000 people, he's met face to face and he's able to just have better engagement than I do. As a big, massive creator, you naturally are going to have better engagement when you have a lower following. So why influencer audience reach is this entire graphic versus engagement rate is so important is because what Playbook does is we take my macro audience or another athlete's macro audience and we pair that with 20 to 200 nano to micro influencers. And not only
so
do
you do
have,
like a marketing mix.
Exactly. Almost. Okay. Exactly. So not only do you have the reach part, but you have the engagement piece, and that makes brands happy and that makes athletes happy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I learned right there. Did you know that? No.
My explanation wasn't as eloquent as I'd like.
No, it was.
But
it makes total sense.
That is, my mother actually made that graphic. She's a big part of the team as well. And that could not explain our marketing approach better.
Is there some sort of analytical system that when a brand says we want this,
yeah,
you go and find the athletes?
Yep.
With my, okay.
And it depends on the budget.
Yeah. To maximize both reach and
engagement. Yeah.
Does engagement lead to more sales for a brand?
It depends on what their, great question. It depends on what their goal is. So if it's activations, if they just want eyeballs, then yeah, it leads to more sales because you have more eyeballs. If they want link clicks, then yeah, it can lead to more sales. It depends on the mission.
Okay.
Speaking your language. It depends on the mission of the campaign.
Interesting. Activations mean?
Activations can mean a variety of different things. So that can mean a brand wants to activate a product. So they're not only bringing eyeballs to the product, but they're bringing people to the website, which brings people to payment, which brings people to sales, which, you know, it helps. That's your KPI right there, your activations.
Yes.
But sometimes there's just basic link clicks, and they just want people to click on a link. And so then that's the mission. It depends.
And do you guys have a software system that also tracks?
Yeah.
Wow.
So in terms of, I've been represented by a variety of different agencies, and you can have your accounts intrinsically linked to like back-end analytics where people can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Or we sometimes often have our athletes send it, most of the time, have our athletes send in screenshots of how the campaign performed a month later, 2 months later, a week later.
And you aggregate that with everyone who's on that campaign.
Exactly. Do case studies with that. And yeah, it comes down to the numbers essentially.
And so will you guys make adjustments through the course of the campaign with a brand? Like,
yes.
Hey, let's try it. Let's mix up the marketing mix a little bit of.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So my favorite part about doing this and doing this with Playbooked is because I'll make a piece of content for example, I can't say that. I'll make a piece of content and I will send that out to the 200 athletes that want to be on the campaign. And instead of them having to digest a brief, come up with creatives, script it, edit it, they'll be like, oh, Chloe made this, so I'm going to make it in my own voice. But now I have a vision. Now I have a direction. And so then they will make their own video, similar to mine, post it. And the videos that do the best, we will take out of the 200, 300, 20, whatever. The videos that perform the best, we will then take those based off what the audience told us, they like it, and we can blast those out. We can put AdSense dollars behind it. We can use A360. We can then take the content that already did well and repurpose it over and over and over and over again.
And Playbooked has a team.
Yes.
That does that.
Yes.
On all channels, YouTube, socials.
We partnered with A360, Accelerate 360, yes. And they are amazing, and they handle that side of things. We know what's going on, but they're the savants at that. We can only do so much.
Hence how you know Trey.
Exactly. Trey okay. Holder, the legend, which is who connected to our listeners, me, to the legend across the table from me right here.
So, no, I worked with A360.
11-11.
11-11.
You don't understand how big of a deal that is.
There you go. What's the significance? She's got a tattoo of 11-11 on.
No, my whole family does. My father, my mom, my brother, and I all got 11-11 tattooed, and I'm a woman of faith. So it's just kind of like a sign that God is saying you're where you need to be.
I guess we didn't give you the rules to the podcast. We don't talk religion. I'm kidding.
I was like, okay, we're doing this.
I come from a devout Roman Catholic family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you still religious?
Very. Do I go to church? No, because I've yet to find a Catholic priest that can keep me awake.
Got it.
So I
love the honesty.
I'm a man of faith. I'm a man of faith. Trust me, you especially pray when you're in a time of war.
Yeah. Do you find that most of your comrades were religious or spiritual in some sense?
There's. I'm going to butcher this. There's no atheists in a foxhole. And even in boot camp, you saw people, especially Marine Corps boot camp.
Yeah.
If you're an atheist, they still make you go to a service.
Sure.
But when you go to like the Catholic mass, you try to sneak in some sleep.
Yeah.
But you saw a lot of people become religious. And
interesting.
For some people, faith is only there when you need it during hard times. It's like, hey, God, help me out of this. But I don't talk to you any other time. No, I always, funny enough, I always prayed before every mission. And I don't wear them anymore, but I had a good story. Do you know what a finger rosary is?
Of course.
Okay. And you put them on your finger and you say your Hail Marys or Our Fathers. Well, I wore two at the time for each of my kids. So if I died, it was like in a letter, hey, you know, each one got a finger rosary that I wore on combat missions. But where that came from was my dad's best friend and his best man. They grew up together in San Francisco. He was also a college football player. Nice. Went to Vietnam as a Marine officer. And my grandfather, my dad's dad, sent him a finger rosary. And he was infantry, Marine Corps. And he ended up out with his platoon one night. And they got reports that a NVA company was heading their direction. They had no
good. What does NVA stand for?
Vietnamese Army Regulars.
Oh, so that's bad.
And so a platoon is roughly 40 guys. A company can be anywhere from like 150 to 300. Right around 100 to 150. So they're outgunned. There's no good terrain, but they're in this tall grass field.
Right.
And so he makes really the only call he could make was he said, everyone just get down. Just get down in the ground. And he said he had never spun that finger rosary like faster, saying his Our Fathers. So it became a tradition where he gave me one and then I purchased another one. I had my son and
wore.
So wore it on everything and I've got them stowed away.
Being so close to potential fatality, does that do something to your brain? Like, can you spot someone and say, I know that you've experienced death?
I think there's a lot of other things that impact your brain. So a lot of our guys walk away with TBI.
Yeah.
Really bad TBI, to include myself. I had multiple lesions on the brain from blast exposure and other things. And just falling and hitting my head.
Yeah.
Combat definitely takes its toll physically, mentally, and spiritually. Can I tell if somebody's been through something? Yeah, no, not really. Maybe if we're deeper in conversation, I can tell there's, you know, mental or spiritual trauma there.
Yeah.
And of course, physically, you just look at the way they get up out of a chair. But I really wanted to use today to pitch my idea for Playbooked.
Ooh, let me hear.
What if we get special operations guys who don't make good money, yeah, but are usually like really fit.
Yeah.
Like really handsome, as my wife says. She's like, oh my God, all your friends are like handsome. I'm like, odd comment to say to your husband. But I mean,
I'm already loving it.
Let's get special operations guys into NIL. I'm sure the special operations community will have a fit.
Yeah. But
like, they should be making some sponsorship money. I mean, they can like,
oh, I'm so in.
Be doing really cool stuff. Stop and be like Coca-Cola.
Yeah. I'm jumping out of a plane. You know what would be cool? This is the marketer in me. If we did special ops guys for content, oh, you could do this. Get some of your cool special ops guys. I'll get some of my best college athletes. And then we just have a content day. We're like, okay, who can do this the best? Okay, who can do this the best? Are you kidding me? Who wouldn't watch that?
And what will create a mystique is that we're going to have to like blur their faces. But again, for the female audience, you know, with
yeah,
their shirts
it
off.
It doesn't matter. Just
like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Genius.
I we love it. Created.
Yes.
We did.
Yeah. I'm sure the government will put a tap down on that real quick.
Yeah. They'll be like, what's Mike doing now? Look at this.
I can do what I want. The proverbial noose is off my neck.
Does that feel amazing?
It did. Mm. It was just my time. 20 years. I was just ready.
Wow. That's such a long time. That's such a long time.
Hell, that's, you're 2 years
life.
Older than, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved the job. Loved the guys even more. It's part of your DNA. Believed in what we were doing because they're like Islamic terrorists are just not good people and they do disgusting things.
Yeah.
As we're seeing with, you know, October 7 Hamas and what they did to just innocent women and children. But as you get more senior, you're exposed to the politics. Mm-hmm. And there's a phrase we use, lions led by dogs. And I'm not a big fan of the leaders in Washington on both sides.
Yeah.
That don't act with civility or professionalism or grace.
Yeah.
And some of the decisions made put guys' lives at risk, if not guys lost their lives because of politicians. And I don't want to sound like some disgruntled, it's just the truth.
Yeah.
And if you're watching politics now, some of the disgusting things, the criminality that they just get away with, they're above the law.
At the expense of other people's lives.
And there's I know a general who I won't mention his name, who was directly involved with Benghazi.
Wow.
In that incident. He's like, don't give me my second star. I am done. Just grotesque decisions made that led to the loss of life in Benghazi.
I got chills again. Wow.
And you also wish you were somewhat untethered.
Mm.
Like, let us go do what we know how to do extremely well. Just unleash the dogs of war.
Yeah.
And as the war went on, it felt like you were fighting with one hand behind your back.
Interesting.
And then eventually a second hand behind your back. And sometimes it was tough to get my guys to go out on missions because what was frustrating is you go out and capture a guy.
Yeah.
And they put him in the Afghani judicial system.
Right.
And maybe that was early in your deployment.
Yeah.
And then he's released and he ends up right back on your target deck. So to look at the guys and say, hey, we got to go recapture this guy.
They're again.
Like, and you got to understand where I serve. These guys are like off the charts intelligent.
Yeah.
And they're like, no.
Right.
No, we're not doing that. And yeah, I'm an officer and be like, no, yes, you are. But it's just like,
you can't argue with logic.
You're like, yeah, no, you're right. So then I would have to, it was my fight to go tell the commanding officer. I'm like,
they won't do it.
They just won't do it. And for good reason. And yeah, I know you can't look me in the eye. And
would you, if you are my age today, or if you could go back and do it all over again, but in this day and age, that's a better way to word it. Would you?
In a heartbeat.
Wow.
In a heartbeat.
Okay.
But I guarantee you the young special operations guys, I don't care, SEALs, Green Berets, they're all amazing.
Yeah.
Are smarter, faster, stronger. And
today?
Better. Yes.
Why?
Look at athletes.
Yeah.
Look at times.
Yeah.
Look at human performance, you know, agility, speed.
Even how technology has advanced
every
that?
Every generation gets better, faster, and stronger. Mm. And so, you know, the thing – one of the things we talked about speaking that I often speak about is called the generational game.
Hmm.
This hit me when I left my last SEAL unit. okay. in Virginia Beach, came out here to Austin. So I was active duty in Austin at the University of NROTC Center. I was supposed to be an instructor, but really I was getting my MBA.
Right.
God bless the SEAL teams. And when I arrived, my commanding officer from my last unit, who's now an admiral, called out, or he was the deputy commander, who's still an admiral now, called out to the commanding officer at the University of Texas, NROTC, and said, hey, we're paying for his billet. Just let him be. He's going to get his MBA. Call him in for a drug test every 90 days.
Yeah.
Which I would come into the unit with all these young midshipmen. I had this big beard.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, take your drug analysis test. And they're like, hey, could you leave now? We don't, like, it's not a good image. I'm like, yeah. Or I was grumpy. But when I arrived, you know, the other instructors basically greeted me, and they just started ripping on the younger generation. And in one, like, I'm freshly divorced. I had one, like, I'm getting my MBA, and I just want to burn it down.
Yeah.
I want to party.
Yeah. You're free.
And I wasn't technically free because I'm still active duty, but they start ripping on the younger generation, you know, the typical, like, snowflakes and safe spaces and skinny jeans.
Trigger warnings.
Hit me, like, one, I'm just sort of tuning them out, but it hit me when one of them was talking. I'm like, oh, this is the generation game. Because I remember when I came in as a young Marine, you had guys that had been either Grenada, Panama, the first Gulf War, Somalia.
Jeez.
And they used to call us nasty names and that we're weak. And I'll save the audience from those nasty names. And I remember just being belittled as a new guy for just being a new guy in the Marine Corps.
Right.
And I had done very well at boot camp. I was honor man, went to the School of Infantry. I was honor man, which is like the number one graduate, and just kept that reputation. But I was what we call it, shitbag. You're like, you're a shitbag. And I'm like, why am I a shitbag? Because I'm new.
Yeah.
And spoke to a great psychologist who's his book comes out in a few 2 weeks, Dr. Chris Free, and he helped me during a dark time.
But oh, cool.
He has worked with veterans for a long time. He was at the VA, and he did research that when the Vietnam-era generation came back, in the VFW, it's the Veterans of Foreign Wars, they have these, like, the bars, and there are the American Legions, that the World War II and Korean guys were not receptive of the Vietnam-era guys coming back, which was a brutal war.
Right.
And what they found is that every generation does that to the next. And so I make a point that the next generation is always the best generation if we choose to pour into them. And funny enough, another just amazing special operations guy, Air Force, he was actually the most senior enlisted service member in the entire military. His name is Ramon Colon Lopez. We call him CZ. It's just a nickname.
Wow.
Actually was on the podcast. We have a children's book coming out in May.
Good for you guys.
Bella's basketball journey.
Stop it.
Turning setback into success.
Yeah.
Life lessons on resilience, perseverance, and optimism. And our plan is to, you know, roll out a book every 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
With 3 new attributes, but we're calling it the One Step at a Time series.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
A children's leadership development guide to aid parents in having conversations about leadership and attributes and characteristics that lead to success.
Wow.
And arm those kids to confront failure, learn, and become. And this is what I say. If you ask a parent, and you're not a parent yet, but you'll understand this. The point of a parent or a leader in a company is to turn your kids and your employees are not your kids into kind, empathetic, respectful, competent human beings who contribute to society, but more importantly, have the ability to stand on their own 2 feet, because you're not going to be there all the time. Mm. You'll be gone eventually. To learn from their mistakes, get up, pick themselves up by the bootstraps.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm wearing boots, Will. I'm from California. I can wear boots. You guys don't have a patent on boots. Pick themselves up by the bootstraps, learn, continue on, and then teach that to the next generation.
Wow.
And if you look at great leaders like General McChrystal, you probably haven't, you may not know the name. He wrote a book called Team of Teams. He was a high-ranking general.
Yeah.
Just an amazing leader. He wrote a book called Team of Teams.
Okay.
And about just creating this unbroken chain of excellence, pouring into his junior officers and junior, senior enlisted to make them more competent than he was. And what he found was that his people no longer needed him to make decisions. They felt autonomy. They felt ownership.
Yeah.
They had earned his trust.
Yeah.
And, that's the generation game I talk about. And I always focus on the 40, 50, 60-year-olds in the rooms. Like, Stop shitting on the younger generation. Are they different? Yes. Yeah. But if we grew up with a cell phone in our hands, guess what? Mm. We would be too.
Yeah.
So find a way to communicate with them. Tailor your style.
Right.
And pour into them.
Yeah.
Teach them the right way to do things. Show them. Accelerate them. And
I love that.
Yeah.
It's really nice hearing that, especially from a man of your caliber in the business world. I think more often than not, I'm hurt. I hear, yeah, I don't want to get cut out of this, or I need to maintain this, you know, vital position in my company, or I don't want to reveal my secret sauce or whatever. What you just said completely debunks all of those statements that I've heard in the past few years, because you're like, I don't care if I get cut out, because I know that what I'm creating and the people that I'm pouring into are going to make something better than what I could have, in a way.
That's the whole point.
I love that.
That is the whole point. It's what I find is that most people want to leave an organization, leave like an athlete. They want to leave their team.
Yeah.
And human psychology is they want to see that team flail without them, to fail.
Yeah.
To really supplement their own self-worth and say to themselves, I was so invaluable to them that they couldn't do it without me.
Yeah, they needed me.
When in reality, you should want them to accelerate at a quicker rate. And that also, it may be a little of protecting, you know, my ego.
But I think that in turn makes you more valuable.
Mm. Team player. I loved the team. And I was always, when somebody was anti-team, I was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
I was pretty brutal. But I think I also projected myself that, like, that's the point. That's why I say the SEALs today are like they're at a different level. Yeah. Do they have the repetitions at war? No.
Yeah.
But that's just timing. And when their time comes, they will absolutely crush it.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
I have a random question.
Go for it.
Just because I'm so curious. Do you think we're going to go to war in the next 5 years?
No. I don't. I think we're in a bad situation right now.
Yeah.
In terms of international stability.
Yep.
The Ukraine is a complicated subject.
Yeah.
And one, you know, Biden just gave his State of the Union last night. What did he start with? I felt this was so tone deaf when so many Americans are struggling.
I'm so glad you're talking about this.
He starts with the Ukraine. It's like, could you be more, like, deaf?
Insensitive.
That's what you went with?
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about the interest rates and families that are paying, out of there, you know what, for groceries that weren't expensive or as gas. Putin, we used to hold the Russian military in such high regard, and they've performed so poorly. Awful. Logistically, their equipment is outdated. So we were actually shocked how poorly the Russian army is doing. The Russian army against Ukraine will win by sheer numbers alone.
Yeah.
So there needs to be diplomacy that comes and just ends this. And if that the Donbass region ends up with Russia,
yeah,
which they do have a large Russian sort of population within it.
Sure.
That's got to be acceptable. It won't be acceptable to Ukrainians, but it's let's just end this thing.
Yeah.
What they're painting the picture is of they're saying or making analogies of Putin to Hitler. The Russian military doesn't have the ability to continue pushing west. Wow. They just don't.
Yeah.
And it's a stretch. With Israel and Hamas, I am shocked. Jordan and I went to brunch. This had to be around October 20th to 20th or 30th.
Okay.
And we go to brunch downtown. Congress is the main avenue that runs into the state building.
Right.
And we're brunchers. We do it every Sunday, usually.
I'm a bruncher, or a Saturday. Too. Love it.
And we walk into this pretty well-known brunch place, and there's all these UT college students with the Hamas head wraps. You're talking white kids. And
in Texas,
we can carry pistols.
I'm a constitutional
carry.
Yeah.
And she sees me just sort of tilt the head, and I'm like, what is going on? I guess there was going to be a pro-Palestinian demonstration later.
I see.
And she's like, just let it go. And I'm like, I am. I'm shocked by the amount of anti-Semitism in this country. And I'm shocked at the lack of logic and perspective by a lot of Americans that just jumped on this Palestinian bandwagon.
Mm.
That if they saw firsthand, or it was their sons and daughters that were raped,
yeah,
decapitated,
yeah,
mutilated, mm, burnt, that you'd have a different perspective.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, Hamas, which is supported by a large swab of the Palestinian people,
yeah,
you get what you sow.
Yeah.
You reap what you sow.
Yeah, that's scripture.
And while sympathetic, not empathetic, and I don't want to see the loss of life. And I've already got Iranian death threats from some of the
news. Do you really?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've gotten a few calls.
Wow.
They're very interesting too. I mean, which they speak English. I don't speak Farsi. Yeah. So I mean, they've got one up on me. But I'd like to see the whole thing end. But the two-state solution is just not going to work. Israel just wants to exist.
Yeah.
When you have Iranians and Palestinians who, led by Hamas,
right,
with their only sort of purpose in life is to kill all Jews.
Yeah.
Like you can't negotiate with that. And this could all end if Hamas just lets go of the
territory
of the prisoners, not the territory.
Oh,
the prisoners. Release the hostages in this
assault. You really think it would end it all?
Oh, yeah. But Hamas is not going to do that. And so what I say is then this falls on the Palestinian people, who could rise up, eliminate Hamas, return the hostages, and end it. Where I go with that, and I'll try to be short-winded, if I allow a drug house to operate two houses down from me,
okay,
maybe gangs, drugs, and I knowingly just let that continue.
Yeah.
And my son is shot in a crossfire. Mm. Yes, while somebody directly is responsible for his death, so am I. Mm. That I didn't step up and do the right thing. And it goes to an old adage of the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to stand by and do nothing.
Interesting.
So there has to be some culpability, some accountability by the people of a nation,
yeah,
that let tyrants just run ragged. But most human beings are not designed that way, 99% of them.
Mm.
I so happen to fall into a group of 1% that will stand up and rather die with a purpose than live on their knees.
And that's your superpower.
Again, my superpower was the guys and the women around me. But no, we're in a bad place in China, quite frankly. What they're engaging is, and this is Eastern warfare philosophy,
yeah,
is to win a war without firing a shot.
Hmm.
And so the fentanyl, the southern border, they're going to defeat us from within and then take Taiwan without a shot fight. Well, the Taiwanese will fight back, but they won't last against the Chinese military.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of naivety. The media doesn't help. Yeah. They don't educate
people. Thank you for answering that question.
Americans lack a lot of perspective, especially, yeah, if they've not traveled the world. The greatest education is traveling the world. Do you ever do a semester abroad?
I just came back from traveling. So this is amazing. This is why I love my job. This is like outside of Playbooked. I got a brand deal with EF Ultimate Break, and they sent me and my best friend to Italy, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Germany, and then I spent some time for about a month in all over England.
Dude, that is an epic trip.
Oh my gosh.
What was the favorite place?
I'm obsessed with Italy. I will move to Italy. I will retire my parents and we will buy a Tuscan village. I mean, a villa.
You were in Tuscany?
Yeah, I wasn't in Tuscany. I've never been to Tuscany. I only went to Venice.
Amalfi Coast?
I didn't even, all I did was Venice. I know.
So all my family is getting their passports approved or our citizenship through Italy, just based off our lineage.
That's awesome. So
my brother, sister, and mother are wellhead. I've got to start the process, which you got to get a lawyer. But
yeah. Good for you guys.
We'll close this out, but I want to ask you, the trajectory for Playbooked.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, are you, do you still consider the market is like untapped?
Oh yeah. I think, I mean, it's no longer the Wild Wild West. The value has been proven and people are seeing it. It's undeniable. Brands are seeing it. It's undeniable. Athletes are seeing it. It's undeniable in terms of the trajectory for Playbooked. I hope and pray that our tech is on every athlete's phone, not because of the piece of the pie that I get. Like outside of the money, outside of the monetization, I think NIL is a great, great way to figure out your why, what we talked about,
mm-hmm,
and use social media as your how, and make actualized change. Financial freedom is great. Money is great. But to to find your voice and to make change and to help people. That's what life is all about.
Impact.
Impact.
The greatest currency in life.
Yes, and NIL is a launch pad for that.
Are you guys growing at a rapid rate?
We are. Life is good. We're getting out of the startup phase, which has been a blessing. But I hope that I can phase out of the education and start a nonprofit for mental health with college athletes. That's a whole other conversation. But that's where I see me going. Playbooked is going to keep being playbooked, but hopefully we can start something called Praybooked. Yeah. And then
for their mental health.
Yeah, for mental
God
health.
God bless you.
Yeah, yeah. And not only, it doesn't have to be religion focused, but it's just, I struggled with that a lot. Yeah. And that's what I want to do, is just help athletes.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
Wait, are you guys headquartered out of Michigan, or is most of the team remote?
Well, we're all over the place, but most of us are in Michigan. I don't think I'm going to be in Michigan for much longer. I'm going to travel. Where? I don't know yet. I love Austin. This is awesome. I like the weather. I like the people. Nashville? Yeah, maybe Nashville. I don't know. Maybe Europe. Who knows?
The sky is the limits for you.
I appreciate
it. I'm going to be watching this journey. What you've done by the age of 22, I couldn't replicate that. When I was 22, I was a jackass. I was a jackass.
Hey, I'm still kind of a jackass, but thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you are funneling your jackassery with such proficiency and laser focus. It's impressive. You need to get out there more.
I do.
You need to start speaking. College athletes need to hear this. They need to stand up for themselves, even though they may hear different rhetoric about NIL.
Totally.
People can find, especially athletes or brands, mm-hmm. as well as fans, playbook.com.
Yes.
And then where can people find you?
You can find me at Chloe, Chloe V. Mitchell, everywhere. And you can find Playbooked at Playbooked app. But if you find me, you find Playbooked. We're linked.
I'm going to get my nephew signed up.
I mean, you can give him my number. I'd love to just tell him how to get in the game. It's my favorite thing to do.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so much money to go around. He should be making some.
Well, Chloe, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Go burn it down at South by Southwest.
Heck yeah, baby.
I think I'll see you tonight. Are you going to that dinner?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I will see you later, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Guys, thank you for another episode of the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior Podcast. And you know, I haven't done this, and I need to start doing it. To your point, go pick up the Everyday Warrior, a no hack practical approach to life. I don't advertise my books, but the reviews, I think, speak for themselves. People have read it twice. They think it's inspirational. It's given them tips to succeed. That's the talent war. We don't have any copies of the Everyday Warrior in here, but it's not preachy. Again, I'm talking about the amazing high performers I served with and what I watch them do on a daily basis. I would love your thoughts. Pick up the book. Always go to Amazon. That's what I say. The Everyday Warrior, a no-hack practical approach to life. Really proud of that one. And I think you may get one or two nuggets that you can implement in your life. All right, guys. Till next time.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.